And welcome back to hour number two with Harry Cooper and SharkHunters.com, a world exclusive here for you tonight. A remarkable confirmation of a discovery in South America that will change the way a lot of people, a lot of open-minded, honest people, look at what happened shortly after World War II. Do go to guests and pull up the gallery. That's our photo show for this particular program. Underneath that, you'll say, you see where it says, let me get my other, there we go. Special guest, Andreas Restrepo, is it Restrepo? You have to pronounce it, Harry. He's the team leader of a very extraordinary operation that is working to certify, validate, and document this particular wreckage of a black service U-boat that has been found down there, as Harry mentioned, just before the break. So you can click where it says visit website here, and you'll see the formal site, Expedition Ultramar Sur, S-U-R. And go ahead, Harry, introduce our guest.
You've done a good job starting. It's Andreas Restrepo. I hope I got that right, Andreas. I'm not very good at other names. Welcome aboard, Andreas.
You did, Harry. It's a lot of R's to roll.
Yes, right. A lot of R's to roll. That's true. Welcome, Andreas.
Thank you, Ted.
Tell us a little bit about how this really most welcome achievement has come about and where you hope to take it in the immediate or near future. Expedition Ultramar Sur. Tell us about that. How did it happen?
Okay, Jack. So this story goes back to 2009. And it started as it usually starts with this kind of wrecks with a fisherman. He was journeying back to the town of Necochea in Argentina, and the bottom would only show sand on his sounder. And all of a sudden, it showed a protuberance of around 4 meters high, which lasted for around another 4 meters, and then it went down 4 meters back to sand. And that was very strange because the nautical charts didn't make reference to anything in the area. So he went back and still had doubts of what he had seen and went back out to sea and decided to fish the area. And he got a good hookup. But whichever fish this was finding some kind of refuge somewhere, and the line would snap or it would snag, and it was impossible to retrieve the fish.
I see.
The species there are like really, you know, strong fighting fish, like the kingfish that we have in Australia. So they seek refuge, intelligent fish, actually, and they know how to snap the line. So he knew that there was something there, and all of a sudden the weight of the fishing line that he was using came back, but it had rust on it. And he realized, you know, whatever this is, was snagged on, you know, this is not a natural formation. It's not a rock. We don't really have those kinds of formations in that area or reef. And he realized there's something down here. And that's where the journey really started. And then we go back and we take a very simple side scan. And lo and behold, there's a hole down there. And if you know what you're looking at, you can see the shadow that the conning tower makes, you know, along the scan that we have. And we have in a vessel that is around 80 meters long, which matches more or less a Type 9. And Harry, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but a Type 9 was about 78 meters long, at least the outer hole. So there must be something left of that because those were around between 76 and 80 meters long. And, of course, when you have the pressure hull inside, it's going to be a bit smaller, around 58 meters.
Yes. Hold on 1 second. Let me just, for our listeners who may just be tuning in a little late, in 2009, a fisherman was down at the location of this particular sunken U-boat, scuttled U-boat, as we realize now. He picked something up on his, they have a fish sonar device. There was something showing up down below that he knew the area well and apparently didn't didn't belong there. He was also fishing in the area, and they have very strong fish down there. They fight. They can break lines easily. So if the nylon line isn't strong enough, it'll snap. And he had a fish after noticing, I guess, something down there. And when he pulled up the line, there was rust on it. This is fascinating. Now, who took the side view camera back and put it down on the bottom? Who did that? Was that the fisherman or somebody else, Andreas?
No, there's more people that go out with him to have a look at this. So, you know, because in the area for many years, since 1945, there were stories of sightings. There were fishermen, coastal residents that saw something in the night. They saw a vessel out, you know, Morse code to the area. They saw rubber ducks coming to shore. They saw trucks coming onto the beach. They were footprints. They had seen that cargo, some form of cargo, had been dragged on the sand. So this was not something unknown to them. It was almost always a rumor that something had happened. So the fisherman was supported by other people, and they started gathering evidence. But they used very rudimentary equipment. So the side scan that was initially done is very poor resolution. But if, for someone that is experienced, you know what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And after the side scan was done, and that material was then reported to the Argentine Naval Prefecture, and they mounted a bigger expedition. They took 12 commercial divers, professional divers down there. They took an ROV, so a remotely operated vehicle. They took over 8 hours of footage. The issue here is that they did not georeference the photographs, and you're in open Atlantic in really poor visibility, and if you have photos taken randomly of the vessel, you don't have a comprehensive global picture of what you're looking at.
Okay.
So it's really difficult to tell, but those photos were then analyzed in Italy by an expert forensic diver that traveled the world recognizing World War II wrecks. And it was very easy for him to determine. You're looking at the conning tower here. You're looking at the deflector of the conning tower. You're looking at pressure hatches. You're looking at the crossed iron support beams of the deck, etc. And for him, it's a submarine. And he alleges it's a Type 9, most likely. And that's where we are. Of course, I'm jumping through time here and many events and how we come to it. Because these people that have been working on this site without really being able to determine without a doubt what it was reached out to us. And we got involved, and fortunately we have a few more resources, and also in terms of technology, we have the big guns. We have multi-beam scans with 2048 beams that can create that 3D point cloud of the submarine. We can create a 3D model of the submarine. We have really powerful side scans as well, and with ultra-high resolution in 4K. And we're planning to bring this down at some point next year, and that's all coming together. We also have ROVs with a system that is called a lantern eye, so we can scan in really murky water and create a very clear picture of what's down there, and the system can actually analyze the type of rust and material you're looking at.
Really? That's fascinating.
So,
technology to the rescue. Great.
Technology to the rescue, yes. And a really interesting group of multidisciplinary experts that are looking into this, that are interested, they understand the historical implications of finding this vessel in that area. It's a very important find in terms of the ramifications that it has for our understanding of history.
Since the boat was scuttled, we think, at this point, there's no hostility going on there at that point after the war, it must be in reasonably good condition, considering it's in salt water. We understand that. Do you have any idea of, is the external hull still intact in places, or is that all rotted away and we're just down to the pressure hull? What's left of it? Do we know?
There's enough left to recognize it, but Harry will know more than myself, but these vessels were scuttled in different ways. They could possibly have opened the bow or the after pier hatches and allow it to fill up with water. Or these vessels, some, had time bombs in them because they didn't want these vessels to fall into enemy hands if they were captured. So these time bombs were activated and they would blow up the whole thing, so it would sink really quickly. You have to remember, these vessels had a lot of sensitive material in them. They had documentation, they had Enigma machines, they had many things that would compromise the operation.
Right.
So looking at this vessel, it seems that there was a lot of damage done, but there's still a lot left for us to be able to attempt an identification. Again, Harry is the expert in this. But most parts of these submarines were serialized, mainly the props, for example, in the electric engine room, for example, as well. You will find a lot of material that had serial codes, and that also would have had the tail number of the vessel. That is, if this is not a black boat, because, you know, they were both above board and under the table. So we'll see what we find.
Yeah, those were the black boats.
That's right, Harry. So if we find anything that could lead us to a positive ID, fine. If not, we will see what we can recover, or if we can find the resources and the funds to raise it, which would be
Andreas, you just said the magic words. First thing I said to Harry was, we've got to get that boat up.
Well, that's a dream, you know. I've been in conversation with Smith Salvage, and they recovered, again, Harry, correct me here if I'm wrong, they recovered the 534, is that correct?
I'm sorry, say again?
Did they recover 534?
Oh, yeah, 534,
Smith
Salvage. Yeah, our good friend, Peterson, was the project manager on that one.
Yeah, so we've been in touch with Smith. It's just an operation that costs into the millions of dollars. And mainly because the barges that are needed for this, they need to be mobilized from Europe down to Argentina. But it could be done, and it would be an extraordinary achievement because the amount of forensic evidence that would still be left in this vessel is enormous. Harry knows about that because we have a case, 534, for example, had close to, what, Harry, 2 tons of documents in it?
That's correct. It had, in addition to all the rest of the things, it had 2 tons of documents. And when I was over there, Lars invited me over there, and they had all these documents in a huge tub of water with salt water in there because they were in salt water, and they were very slowly, carefully leaching out the salt water and replacing it with fresh water, and they figured it would take a year or so. And then, unfortunately, there was all sorts of problems there. They damn near had the submarine repossessed, taken out, broken up, but that's a long story.
This, Andreas, if the boat could be brought up, I'm sorry, if the boat could be brought up, this would be a remarkable tourist attraction, I would think. And
it would be remarkable.
Yes. Go ahead.
I agree, Jeff. It's remarkable not only for Argentina, but for the rest of the world, because it raises many questions. And questions that may have an answer, we don't know. Again, we go back to the documentation found in 534. One of the really significant pieces of documentation that I think we should highlight is a handbook by the Reichsmarine on the east coast of South America. So they had on board a handbook that was over 400 pages detailing in minute detail the coast of South America. So this is not an operation that was spontaneous. It had been planned for years, or at least it had a really solid basis on very detailed intelligence. And that's something that they had in the vessel. And it's a handbook that saw the light for the first time in Berlin in 1913, and it had been updated all the way. And we find it again in the submarine in 534. And As researchers, we have a lot of questions in terms of the significance of finding a vessel like this in that part of the world. We wonder, is it part of a wolf pack? What were they doing there? Were they only going to Argentina, or did they have anything else to do in the South Atlantic, the Falkland Islands in Antarctica? Many questions that we're hoping to find an answer for. But we really need to conduct a forensic exploration of the site.
And this is going to be, first stage will occur when, again, Andreas?
Dates are still to be confirmed. It's sometime next year. But there are many things that need to come together. We're working on that, yes. So as soon as we have confirmation of that, we can share with you. If you want to subscribe to the website, we'll keep everyone updated as to how this progresses. Many things have to line up for a project like this. Yes, it's a lot of ducks to line up.
Oh, yeah.
But it's coming together nicely. I would invite all the listeners to subscribe. We'll keep you updated. And if you want to join us in these efforts, we will need a lot of support from you guys to pull something like this off.
Is the Argentine Navy interested in pitching in to get this done? It's not a war grave. It's a scuttle boat. So that's different. Are they interested in this? Now, they lost a submarine several years ago. Tragedy down there, but
on the 15th of November, as a matter of fact.
That's right. I remember.
San Juan.
Yeah.
Now, so do you get any? They lost that castle.
Any support from Argentina in this endeavor, beside the initial team they sent up there?
Not yet, but we know that. They are within reach, and we have contacts in there that we can reach out to, and which we will require at some point. But, you know, I see that they would be willing to collaborate in some respects. Of course, this is the naval prefecture. They have, you know, their rules, and we need to operate within those rules. So, of course, we need to keep them involved.
Got it. Harry, a question on scuttling these boats. Now, Andreas mentioned that sometimes they would have explosives to be damn sure the boat went fully down and so forth. He suggests that from what they've been able to see so far, the boat does look to have been damaged. Maybe not. What are your thoughts on scuttling U-boats? That's kind of an unusual subject, but any thoughts?
No, not all that unusual. I have never found any evidence that they carried scuttling charges on board, like the movies all say. How many sailors would put to sea on board a ship that has
full of bombs?
Explosives to bring their own boat down, because that would indicate that they're doomed for failure. 505, for instance, that's the normal way they would scuttle the boat. They opened the sea valves, the one that fed cooling water to the engine. It's an 8-inch pipe coming in, and there was a sea strainer in the pipe, and so that idiot Hans Gobler claims he's the one that opened the sea valve. That's not true. It was engineering officer Hauser. They take that. There's a valve, and there's a couple of wing nuts holding this flat cover down. You take off the wing nuts, you open the valve, and 8 inches of water comes streaming in, and it gives everybody time to get off of it. I can't imagine they would want to blow up this boat, which I really believe was the boat that brought Don Angel and Martin Borman down there. They'd have no reason to blow it up and attract attention to themselves.
Right. What number of boat would that have been?
Well,
do we
that's
know?
A black boat. You know, they didn't have
so
numbers.
No assignation at all. It's just off the books completely. I just want people to understand.
Right. They had a lot of those black boats. But like Andreas was saying, and we've come up with this in our own research that overlaps what he's found. We found this years ago. People actually saw some submarines out to sea flashing lights, and people on the shore flashing lights back to them. There have been rubber boats coming in with stuff, dragging them into the into caves. I think Nicosia is an, I think it's there, or it's Visegasel, but they had caves there, and they had evidence of German supplies in there. So it's just incredible. World War II ended, Germany surrendered, Hitler blew his brains out, they hanged, well, they were going to hang Goering, and that's the end of it. Horse feathers, that is nowhere near the end of it. As we're finding out now, the Third Reich didn't die, they just moved to South America. And are they dead yet? No comment.
I'll just check into the Hotel Xiao Xiao and ask the question again.
If you got a pile of money, that's a magnificent place. And I know the manager. As a matter of fact, her card is laying on my desk right in front of me. I've known her for ever since 2008 when she was in charge of hospitality there. It's a magnificent place. I don't have that kind of money.
No, I'm sure they have photos on the walls of their American presidents and one secretary of state who have almost been mysteriously appeared at the Xiao Xiao Hotel.
According to Sieg Agent Nemo, who's pretty sharp at this, he says, no, only two presidents were at Xiao Xiao. Two more were there in Argentina, and that was it. However, our friend, who Peter Parker, we call him, he says every single president was there from Eisenhower up, and
this is our
they were
friend
signing
saying
treaties.
This.
Say again?
Our friend is saying this.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Yeah, he's a deep cover agent working right now, so I don't know. There was a lot of stuff that we're not supposed to know about.
Lots, yeah.
Yeah, lots of it.
All right.
Like
Andreas,
said,
let's go back to Andreas here.
Go
have
back.
You been down? How many times have you been down to the site, Andreas? Did you go there personally, or is it just the organization that had other people go there? Have you been there?
Yeah, no, I'm not working alone, Jeff. This is an effort by many people. I've been down. We're going again next year. And I know the Yao Yao as well. So I've been there, beautiful hotel. We've actually kayaked over to San Ramon, La San Sinalco as well. So quite familiar with many of these sites as well that Harry mentions in his books.
Got it. Well, this is very exciting. Now, we have some pictures that we want to take a look at. Are you able, Andreas, to see the gallery of photos that we have up right now?
I am.
Okay.
I am.
Let's go look at... go ahead, please.
Do we work... We can work... to the gallery, or maybe if we can direct everyone to the website, then I can show you these same images and a little bit more, because I didn't understand the dynamics of how this would work. If I knew, I would have given you the numbers of the images. I would have organized them in a special way to match the story. Maybe
we'll do this again. Let's look at Harry's pictures and then go to your site, and you can direct us to the images you have on your site. So Harry's pictures, we have... go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. I'll have these same pictures are in the website. So we'll find them. They'll just not be random like they're here. There's a lot more to show you.
All right. So, would you rather just go straight to your site?
Yeah, if we could direct everyone... to the site, is the link here on the gallery? I cannot find it.
Yes, yeah, it's so, right below. It's right below where it says gallery in guests. You'll see special guest, Andreas, team leader, visit website here. So if you click on here, you'll go right to Andreas' website, Expedition Ultramar Sur. So take us from there slowly, and we'll get to the pictures. Where would you like
before
us to go?
Before we get started, let me interrupt for a second.
Go ahead.
Andreas, we've got a time lapse between Andreas and us. I just got an email from Sieg Agent Nemo, who says 8 American presidents went to South America, went to Argentina, but only three went to Shaoxiao, which was Ike, Clinton, and Obongo.
Got it. All right. Well, very good. Thank you.
Agent Nemo, very well. So if we could have everyone go to the website where they're following the link for entering ultramarsur.com. Right. That's ultra, ultramarsur.com.
Ultramarsur, ultramarsur.com. And there's the homepage. Remarkable photo of a boat in heavy seas. Go ahead. Where do we go from there?
Okay, very well. So, what we should highlight from the homepage is that this has been designated as the most significant wreck in Argentine naval history, and that was done by Argentine Senator Silvina Garcia. So, there is interest in the government for this to come to light. And that leads us straight onto the second page, which is the mission. We have another congressman there called Alberto Arces. So if you scroll down, you'll
meet Alberto.
Hold on
1 second.
He's a congressman.
Hold on, Andres. At the top of the homepage is a menu bar at the top. Do we click on one of those, or do we just simply scroll down on the homepage?
So we go to the navigation bar at the top, and we click on mission.
Mission, okay. Mission, top left. At the homepage, clicking on that, and there's a mission statement. All right, we're on that page now. Go ahead.
Very well. So, what we should highlight from this page is Alberto Arces' statement. He's a congressman with the National Congress in Argentina, and he's mentioned that we have to get the truth out about this wreck. And I'll read his quote, which really highlights the importance of this mission. And he goes on to say in an official document that we have, the Argentine government must do everything possible to achieve one thing regarding this shipwreck in Necochea, that the whole truth and nothing but the truth be known. Only by clarifying what happened in the dark stages of our past can we have a better future, having contributed to clearing the burdens weighing on the global public opinion regarding our nation and being able to achieve justice.
Very nice
statement. So I think that this highlights...
Yes, Alberto Arces, a congressman, National Congress, Argentina. That was his statement. Good.
It's good that somebody in the government wants the truth to come out, and God bless him for that. Too many government officials want to just squash the truth. Don't mind me. I'm just rinsing out my coffee cup to get another one.
I sound like you were drowning there for a
minute. That's something to highlight from the mission page, and the listeners can, in their time, just read the rest of the information that we have here. Now we can jump again to the top and click on history.
All right, back up to the top menu bar, and let's click on history. That's second from the left at the top, all right? We're on the history page now. Very good.
Okay, so here, what we need to highlight is a letter from the chief of the Argentine Navy to the minister of the Navy, whose surname was Peisaire, and he's for the first time he's announcing on the 17th of May, 1945, that they know of a convoy of U-boats that is on its way to Argentina, and they are raising the points. And they know that they may be coming to surrender or scuttle in the vicinity of the territory. So it's a really important letter. You have the translation there, you have the original as well, and then another document which refers to submarines that were going further south along the Atlantic, so South Atlantic, on its way, on the way, or the possible way to Japan. So there is no doubt that U-boats made it as far south as Tierra del Fuego, and possibly further south, as you will see from another very special document that we have from Russian intelligence. So,
This letter that is translated into English at the top, very interesting. It said, let me read it for everyone, just part of it. It's written to Your Excellency, Ministry of the Navy, Buenos Aires. I have the pleasure of addressing Your Excellency to inform you that, as a result of information supplied to this department, according to which German submarines might be found on routes whose directions overlap with those coming toward our coasts. I have alerted the sea and river squadrons and the General Maritime Prefecture so that they may take the relevant steps in the light of the possibility that their intention is to surrender or to scuttle their vessels in the vicinity of our territory. So this is May 1945. Very interesting letter. Very interesting. All right.
Very
next
interesting.
Up.
This is only 10 days after Berlin falls in the hands of the Russians.
Right.
So that's where the journey starts, really, with this letter. And as we mentioned, this operation would have been grounded in highly reliable intelligence. And we highlight here the book, the handbook that was discovered in the 534. So the Red Marine and then the Kriegsmarine would have had access to really detailed intelligence about the coast of South America. We see it with this handbook. We also have maps of the Argentine coast going back as far as 1921. So if we scroll a little bit further down, we have the Reichsmarine nautical charts of the Argentine coast.
Yeah, scroll down, everyone, and you'll see that. 1921,
yeah,
Reichsmarine nautical charts.
1921.
Yeah.
And this is in incredible detail because you have depth soundings, you have a U-boat. You have the possibility there to scroll in to the right and you find another image which highlights a U-boat training area just in front of Mar del Plata. That's also very interesting to note that as far back as 1921, probably the Reichsmarine was undergoing a lot of training there with their U-boats. So, and then now we go back to 1938. We're talking now about the Kriegsmarine. So the Reichsmarine becomes the Kriegsmarine in 1935. And Harry, again, please fact-check me as I'm talking, please, in case I get those dates wrong. But
oh, you're doing fine.
The Kriegsmarine comes into effect in 1935. So now we have a really interesting map here. Unfortunately, we have the access to the original. It's a massive map. So it's an optical chart. The image is very heavy to render online, so we don't have the detail. But what you can see here are the U-boat travel patterns coming from Europe. So you can see they were coming down the west coast of Africa. Then they would head over to the east coast of Argentina and Brazil. And you can see all of the paths that they were taking to come and go from South America.
Hmm. I see.
And this includes paths going as far south as the Falklands.
Right. Let me interrupt for a second. We know how incredibly thorough they are. We have, as we've reported on the show years ago, when the cruiser Dresden went through the Magellan Straits, 1915, after the first Battle of the Falkland Islands, young Oberleutnant Canaris was on board, and they found all the little U-plätze, unbekannt plätze, all the little hidden harbors where, and coves where a boat, a submarine, a ship, whatever, could hide. There were no facilities, no docks, no nothing, just coves where a ship could hide. And with the typical German precision, they indicated where you had to be to enter these coves and what your compass heading was. And when you got in, it told how deep the water was and the holding type for your anchors, what was the nearest civilization, how far away they were from the steamer lanes, everything. And we believe that when the Graf Spee got so badly damaged and went into Uruguay, her supply ship, the Altmark, disappeared for about 3 months. And we think that Altmark was in one of these U-plätze. So what Andreas is saying is absolutely on the money. The Germans had charts of everything Okay, now I'll shut up. Continue there, Andreas.
Yeah, if I might add one thing.
Very well.
This is,
all right, thank you.
When you scroll down on the history page, you'll also come to a letter that Andreas mentioned moments ago. I'm trying to read it. I can't read Russian. It's from the CCCP. It's a Soviet Union document. 1940. What year was that, Andreas?
This is 1945. And yeah, I'll get to that later, Jeff. It's a really important letter.
Very good. All right, I'm standing by.
It's not only very important, Jeff, but it's quite unique.
Go ahead. Now, just to keep you abreast, Andreas, we have about 15 minutes left, so we're going to have to do as much as we can in 15 minutes.
Okay, we'll go fast. And so we have this map with the U-boat travel pattern, so no one has any doubt that U-boats went at least as far south as the Falklands, but you'd see from the Russian letters that it seems that they kept even further south, as Antarctica, as Queen Maud Land,
yes,
which is incredible. So next, if we scroll down, you'll see a few newspapers from the era, because these sightings of submarines along the Argentine coast were documented in newspapers from the time. And also the FBI filed X-25 on U-boat landings in Argentina. Brick has been doing the rounds, but we have a really good scan of this whole file. We have really, really good quality archives of this document. And that's where the FBI gets hammered by rumors of submarine landings in Argentina. You, Harry, would probably be very familiar with this document. And we have the 530. As Harry mentioned, this is the first submarine that surrenders in Mar del Plata on the 10th of July, 1945. And then we come to this letter. So
this now Andreas, excuse me. This is the letter. When you find that FBI, it's an envelope. You'll see it. Look below the envelope. There's a link right you can click, and you'll see the letter that is within that envelope from the FBI, and it's in English. 1945, July 14th, 1945. Go ahead and tell us. I can read that real quickly if you'd like, but tell us what that letter means. What is it telling us?
Well, I think this letter is talking to the fact of possible German submarine landings in the Argentine coast.
Yes.
And the readers in their time can read in detail. But what I think is important here is to see the note from J. Edgar Hoover. So J. Edgar Hoover had a very particular way of signing that looks like an H with a J. You see his note here in dark blue. He said every effort should be made to run the rumor down. So he took this very seriously. Running it down doesn't mean to censor. It means to follow the lead and get to the bottom of it.
Fascinating. That's Hoover. Wow.
So this document is signed by Hoover. So, and your listeners can read in their time, but
yeah,
I highlighted it here.
May I do
this folder,
Andreas? Hold, please.
Sure.
1 second. I don't want anyone to miss the importance of this. The letter that is marked up by J. Edgar Hoover, which says in his own longhand, every effort should be made to run this rumor down. All right? And he draws a line up to the last portion of the text in the letter. And it says, another report received from source of unknown reliability that Hitler was landed in Argentina approximately June 20th, that his face was disfigured, and that Argentine Army Major Leon Bengali or something will escort Hitler to a secret hiding place in the Chaco territory. All rumors are being investigated. So here's proof that in July 14, 1945, the FBI had somewhat interesting, at the very least, not proven, but sources saying that Hitler was observed to have landed in Argentina, and he had his face had been disfigured. That's all it says here.
Right. Let me pop in on that one. I don't know about the disfigured face. That was a rumor. But Wermuth told me that his boat and 977, without being planned, was the greatest distraction to let Hitler land quietly on that plane by Paysandu, Uruguay, because everybody thought Hitler came in on these two submarines. So they were just digging through the submarines like mad. Where were you? Where did you stop? Where did you land? Whatever. And they totally overlooked that airplane coming in. So Wehrmuth said that they were the best distractions, even though that was not their mission. But everybody was looking for Hitler on those two submarines, which is maybe where Williams and Corsi got the bright idea that he rode one of those boats down. But he did not. He came, but J. Edgar Hoover and the Bureau and all sorts of documents we have kept saying there was rumors that Hitler came down on one of these boats, but there was no confirmation because he didn't. He came by plane into Uruguay.
Harry, did Wehrmuth ever say anything about the big Junkers six-engine plane? Did he say plane, airplane, or anything like that?
No, he never said anything. He insinuated that there was a plane involved because he said that they provided distraction for Hitler landing somewhere else. But I don't know if he even knew about the 390. It wasn't that it was a big secret. It's just that the Army or the Navy guys didn't know a hell of a lot that was going on with the Luftwaffe, just like in our military.
It's all compartmentalized. Understood.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was in the Air Force 4 years. I didn't know what the Navy was doing.
Well, you never knew what I was doing either. All right.
Okay.
Everything's compartmentalized. That's the point. That's very interesting. Go ahead, Andreas.
Yeah, so, yeah, we only extracted that letter from the FBI file because it's a very large file. It has over 200 pages.
Oh, my.
But I think it would be too much to upload onto the site. So we were showing you the 530, which Harry already talked to. That's the first stop to surface in Mar del Plata. And in the same chronological order, we jump from the July 10th to August 1st, 1945. And that's the date of the letter, because albeit we had it translated by a certified translator, which just didn't include the translation here, because I need that translation stamped by her official seal, and then we'll be able to upload the document. But what the translation says is that Merkulov, who was the head of the USSR and KGB, that's the precursor to the KGB, and the People's Commissar of State Security, he's writing a letter to Viktor Abakumov. He's the head of the USSR main directorate of counterintelligence, which is the SMERSH. And he's saying, I'm asking you to guide the SMERSH counterintelligence operatives in the Soviet occupation zones in Europe with the aim to search and obtain any operational and technical information regarding the activities of German submarine fleet and the Fuhrer's special convoy, in quotes, for transporting people and valuables to South American countries. And here's where it becomes really interesting. And Antarctica. This is the first letter in which we ever learn that these convoys could have been going as far south as Antarctica for some unknown reason.
That's really remarkable.
This is another whole chapter that Andreas and I are jumping onto. Let me interrupt for a second. I just got another email from Sea Agent Nemo, and he said, the Hitler with the disfigured face was a double of the Fuhrer, purportedly with theatrical makeup as a disguise. And he said, your comment, a distraction, is correct. And then she goes on to say, thank you for a truly excellent broadcast.
Wow. Well, so, this is good. Very, very interesting. You're hearing real history here, dear friends.
The onion skins are peeling off. There, you know, you peel off one layer, and there's 10 more. And we're working in conjunction with Andreas and his people. We're going to get some more stuff discovered.
Understand that the Soviet letter is also very important because it's quite clear that the Soviets were not at all convinced that Hitler died in Berlin at the bunker. No.
That's the real farce. He did not die there in Berlin in the bunker. No. He died in Bolivia, 1962.
FBI and Soviet documentation to point to the fact that they were on the lookout for Hitler. Very interesting. Go ahead,
yes,
Andre.
Yeah. That's right. And these Soviet documents are quite unique, Jeff. And this letter makes part of two volumes of documents, close to 800 pages that we have.
Wow.
That I've never seen. I haven't seen in the Western world before. We're going to.
I can't even believe you.
I
can't believe you have that many. That 800 pages. That's incredible. I won't even ask where you got them, but you got them, and this is a that's a phenomenal achievement. Great.
This comes from a general that defected, and the documents are authentic. What we're trying to discover is if what they state is authentic, and that's how we get to this submarine. Because in this letter, we find, you know, there are submarines going to South America, they're going to Antarctica, and that's where we first raise the question, and that's how we have a match when the Argentine crew contacts us, and we know about this, we realize that there's a way to ground truth these documents, at least with the finding of one submarine that shouldn't be there by all accounts. But these documents are really important. These documents were presented to Stalin in 1945. On the 19th of December 1945, Stalin received a report from his intelligence agencies, the Gestapo and the NKGB. And this letter is part of that report, and it goes into a lot more depth of what these submarines could have been doing in the South Atlantic and Antarctica, and it is fascinating. But the first ground truthing of those documents is this submarine. So carrying on with the...
Yes, go ahead.
No, you're asking me something, Josh, yes?
This is opens the Argentina Antarctica door wider, especially the Antarctica, the hidden base in the Antarctic. Just off the record here, let me rephrase that. How do you feel about a true German base in the Antarctic, in Antarctica, after the war that was built during and before the war, whatever, that actually held Germans? I'm not saying Hitler was down there, because we know where Hitler was, but others may have been down there, German scientists, German engineers, German technological experts. Was there a German base in Antarctica, in your opinion,
Andreas? Are we supposed to go into that at this point, Andreas?
We don't have to. We can tease the people and say, no comment. How's that?
No comment, I think, is the best comment.
All right, excellent. I asked the question, no comment.
Or how do I feel? Well, we have correspondence with Professor Colin Summerhayes from Cambridge, from the Scots Polar Research Institute. He wrote a paper on the myth of the Hitler base in Antarctica. What he missed in saying that the Farisei and the 977 could have never reached Antarctica, that he doesn't understand what happened in Argentina. And he's the first one to admit that he has no idea what happened in Argentina. And there is no way that you can understand what happened in Antarctica if you don't understand that there were resupply stations for those submarines all along the coast of Argentina and the Falklands. So these submarines had a way to resupply water, fuel for the crews to exercise and see a little bit of sun, and then carry on south on a very long journey to an area just off of Queen Maud Land. So you ask me how I feel about the possibility of that base. I'll tell you how I feel, Jeff, in no uncertain terms. That base not only exists, but the incredible information that came to us through the general of the USSR includes the maps of how to reach that base.
Oh, my.
Yeah. We should let it drop there, Andreas, before we get in.
Okay. Yeah, we're just
into another area we shouldn't get into.
That's a thank you for that. Fascinating.
I'll leave it there, but it's just to answer Jeff's question, and we'll see where that leads, but it's for another chapter of this investigation.
Yes. All of this...
In any case, I'm carrying on.
We're going to have to say goodnight at this point, but Harry, certainly we can do this again next month or whenever you'd like. It's up to you guys. I'm more than happy to do anything you'd like. So what we want to do is remind people that if you'd like to become a part of this phenomenal effort to roll back the hidden history, the truth of what happened at the end and after World War II, you want to join this organization, the Expedition Ultramar. And the URL, if you're just listening and you're not at a computer, it's ULTA Ultra, MARSUR.com. And go there, look around, and join. And you'll support a wonderful organization that's doing some unique work. Harry is deeply involved with this, and we will track it for you here.
So, don't forget sharkhunters.com.
Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, Andreas, I want to thank you on behalf of all our listeners for being here tonight and sharing some truly phenomenal information. We really appreciate it. We will talk to you again.
Very well, Jeff. Goodbye.
Okay.
Auf Wiedersehen.
All right, Admiral. That was great.
I told you this was going to be one hell of a blockbuster show.
Well, the whole thing was, the last 2 minutes from Andreas was stunning. What the Soviets had, and that general, the defected general, brought with him out of there. Whoever that guy was, he was smart. He knew what to take.
They took everything except all the Nazi gold. Where's the Nazi gold?
No, it's in the train, buried in the mountains somewhere.
Over there in Poland.
That's it. Gad. Well, okay, we've got from Andreas, and we will follow this as it develops, as much as we are all allowed to participate with Harry and Andreas and that group. This if there was a legitimate base down there, there had to be more, like the 1938 visit to Antarctica, there had to be more ships going down there, Harry, with more material to do things, to construct a base, a hidden base. And there's a map showing where it was. Oh, that wasn't the only group of boats that went down there. The Soviets knew. They had a map showing where it was. That's what we just learned. Wow.
Yeah,
thank
you
for that.
The Soviets were some of the best spooks in World War II.
Yeah. All right. Well, this again, and we'll get into this in future months. Admiral Byrd, Operation High Jump, what were they really looking for? I think we just got a big view into that particular eyepiece of what they were looking at. What did they see? I think they may have had a copy of that map. Who knows? They got their clocks cleaned down there. We know that.
Oh, yeah. They wound up on the wrong side of that fight.
You got it. Well, Senor, that was a remarkable program. Simply stunning.
I told you. Yep.
You were right.
And we got a lot of emails coming in, especially SIG Agent Nemo, who has added a lot.
Well, I'm sure that we'll cover this next month, and if you want, maybe we can do a longer version next month or do a couple of them, however much you want to participate in terms of time we can make available.
No problem. I got to get those letters translated. Andrea said he'll have his certified translators do it. I'm not so sure that's the way we'll go. I don't know. We've got plenty of, in Shark Hunters, we've got plenty of linguists, so we'll
Correct.
See.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm more concerned with having another cup of coffee and going to bed. It's 11 o'clock at night here, and the weather's absolutely crappy in Florida right now.
All right. It happens. Well, you've done great, as usual. This is a real exclusive, and thank you on behalf of everyone listening who was enchanted with that information. So great. Great job.
Yep.
Have
Boots
fun.
Boots on the
Take
ground.
Care.
We'll get it done.
All right.
All right. Have a good day, guys.
Thanks. Good night, Harry. Okay. Well, that hopefully, and once again, the address for that new organization looking into the boat and obviously much more, and Harry is on their board of directors, and Ultramar, ULTAMARSUR, MARSUR.com. And just go take a look. Okay. And under history is where we were last looking, by the way, at those letters from the FBI and the Soviet Union. We will be right back with more after this.